Section 2, The Industrializing State. As you read, look for the role of the State Development Board in diversifying our economy, creation of a technical education, TEC, system, the growing number of foreign companies doing business in South Carolina, factors leading to growth in tourism, changes in South Carolina agriculture, terms, right to work law, Sun Belt. If in the 1880s you had traveled in a time machine to the 1930s, you would have seen a great many things that seemed familiar: the beautiful natural scenery, the largely rural way of life, the cotton in the fields. But if you had time traveled all the way to 1980, you would have seen fewer cotton fields and many more trees. There would be broad highways crowded with speeding cars and trucks, and airplanes in the skies. Factories would be making not just cotton cloth, but everything from synthetic cloth to parts for nuclear bombs. Signs of wealth would be visible everywhere, with stores offering goods from all across the world. Unfortunately, there would also be signs of poverty and polluted streams. You would see the good and bad results of industrialization. The drive for industrial diversity. Textiles continued to dominate South Carolina's industry after World War II, but other industries were making headway, some introduced during the war, such as chemicals. Wood pulp and paper were growing rapidly. South Carolina political and business leaders consciously began trying to attract a variety of new industries. Diversity was needed. In 1954, the General Assembly created the State Development Board with a mission to get businesses from other states or foreign countries to build factories in South Carolina. Every city's Chamber of Commerce added to its efforts. Recruiters offered the new industries attractive reasons to move into the state. These included good natural resources, water supplies, and port facilities, inexpensive land, low taxes plus special tax breaks, a plentiful supply of cheap labor, and no fear of labor unions. The government had tried to make sure labor unions got no foothold by passing a right-to-work law in 1954. A right-to-work law is an anti-union law that protects a worker from being required to pay union dues even if the union has negotiated the worker's contract with the employer. The loss of dues made it very difficult for the union to operate, which, of course, is the purpose of the law. Technical education. Governor Ernest F. Hollings convinced legislators in 1961 to create a technical education, TEC, system. The TEC system set up programs to train employees for a specific company that agreed to come into the state. The state also created 16 permanent TEC centers across the state, intending to place one within 25 miles of virtually every state resident. These have all become community colleges, whose credits transfer to four-year colleges and universities in the state. The South Carolina TEC system has served as a model for other states. The TEC colleges and other programs are among the reasons for rapid industrial growth in our state. They are also one reason so many foreign companies have chosen South Carolina as the U.S. location for their manufacturing plants. Foreign investments. At one time, South Carolina was almost closed to foreign investment, but since the 1950s, the state has rolled out the red carpet for foreign businesses. Indeed, one of the many new duties the governors have taken on in the past 50 years has been to travel to Europe, Japan, or in recent years, China, to convince corporations to do business with South Carolina. In the 1960s, the Piedmont cities of Spartanburg and Greenville took the lead in seeking European manufacturers. As the textile industry began to lose more and more of its business and jobs to poorer countries, foreign investment in a diversity of industries was seen as good for the economy. The Upper Piedmont succeeded in attracting European companies that wanted to be a part of the new Sunbelt of industry. The Sunbelt became the shorthand term for the strip of states from the Carolinas across the southern United States to California. This belt grew rapidly in population and diversified industry after about 1960. The growth was at the expense of the old industrial Northeast that was rapidly coming to be called the Rust Belt. The German chemical giant Hoechst set up a large factory near Spartanburg to make polyester fiber for clothing. Michelin, the big French tire maker, built several factories in the Piedmont in the 1970s. Several manufacturers of machinery for the textile industry moved in from Switzerland and Germany. Foreign investments in the state continued to grow in decades after the 1970s. The number of workers employed by foreign companies increased. By 1987, foreign companies employed over 75,000 South Carolinians, and the biggest prizes were yet to come. Nuclear power generation. One of the main requirements of industrial expansion is availability of electrical power. In the 1960s and 1970s, South Carolina power companies began investing heavily in nuclear power generators to meet that need. The first nuclear power plant in the state, the H.B. Robinson plant near Hartsville, began operation in 1971. This plant was soon followed by the much larger Oconee Nuclear Station near Seneca that went online in 1973. The V.C. Sumner Station opened near Jenkinsville in 1982, and 3 years later, the Catawba plant in York County started production. In 2012, over half the electricity used in South Carolina was generated in these nuclear plants. Two new reactors are expected to begin operating within a decade. The tourist business. After World War II, South Carolina experienced massive growth in tourism. Americans became more numerous, had higher incomes, and became more mobile because of improved highways and air travel. Our beaches and mountains, rivers and lakes were natural lures for travelers. Many tourists from northern states discovered that the Palmetto State was almost as warm as Florida, was much less expensive, and had many more historical attractions. Charleston, with many historical sites and several fine beaches nearby, became one of the prime destinations in the country. Georgetown, Beaufort, Camden, Aiken, Columbia, and dozens of other smaller towns also offered rich experiences for history lovers. Our splendid state parks attracted campers, hikers, boaters, and sport fishers. The parks average about 18,000 visitors per day. Beachfront parks are the most popular. Myrtle Beach boomed as it promoted the Grand Strand. Dozens of high-rise hotels were constructed near the beach. About 100 golf courses have been built in the Myrtle Beach area. Water parks, miniature golf courses, an aquarium, shopping malls, and several theaters with live entertainment were designed to keep tourists busy. Developers built luxury resorts, primarily second home communities for part-time residents, on the Sea Islands at Hilton Head, Kiawa, and Isle of Palms, and on the Grand Strand at Litchfield and De Bordeaux. Their creation was not without controversy because they often displaced communities of African Americans who had occupied the land since the days of slavery. In the first decade of the 21st century, South Carolina was entertaining about 30 million tourists each year. They generated from $12 billion to $17 billion in income for the state annually. Tourism employed the most workers of any industry, about 12% of the total workforce. Agriculture. The importance of agriculture in South Carolina continued to decline in the decades after World War II. down from 139,000 farms in 1950 to 24,700 in 2007. Fewer than 10,000 people consider farming their principal occupation, a radical change from the first 300 years of South Carolina's history. Cotton is no longer king of the cash crops. Tobacco, the product of the PD, passed cotton as the major crop for several years, but health concerns have caused it to slip. Corn, soybeans, and cotton surpassed tobacco, which was followed by peaches, vegetables, and hay as the major cash crops by 2007. But bigger than all these combined in bringing income to farmers was livestock and livestock products such as milk and eggs. Nearly one-third of farm income is generated by broilers, young, frying-size chickens. Also very important to the state's economy is another kind of crop, trees. Timber brought to sawmills is worth almost $1 billion annually. Wood products are the third largest manufacturing business, adding over $8 billion annually to the state's economy and employing about 32,000 people. Approximately two-thirds of South Carolina's surface is covered with trees, soaking up carbon dioxide and producing oxygen, a really good exchange. 80 to 90,000 seedlings are planted each year to keep the wood products and clean air coming. Do you remember? 1. Define in sentence form, right to work law, Sunbelt. 2. What has become of the 16 permanent TEC centers in the state? 3. Which agricultural products have surpassed row crops in bringing income to farmers?